Hi everyone, my name is Michael Frazis. I thought today I'd just go through a few interesting charts and kind of thoughts and go through a few things that we're seeing in the market at the moment. Surprisingly, it's the 22nd of November. The NASDAQ is at all-time highs, but it feels like a bear market for mid-cap growth. There's a huge number of companies that are well below, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60% below their highs. And market breadth is one of the worst, you know, it's been in a very long time. Now, that's interesting because typically what happens when markets roll over is a lot of stocks start declining. A handful of leaders, typically the biggest kind of leaders of whatever bull market you're in, continue to rally. And it's a common pattern that as the rest of the market kind of drops off, the leaders push on until eventually the whole thing rolls over. Now, of course, there's no guarantees. It's just a pattern that, you know, experienced people see in the market. And it seems to be like we're in one now. And so that makes it really interesting from an investment perspective, because you can really think about whether, firstly, whenever you see these companies like these, like fast growing, amazing tech companies sell off 30, 40, 50%, very often that's an opportunity. So you need to think through that, but also you need to kind of listen and think, is the market telling us something we need to know? And there's a few interesting things going on. So I'll now share some slides. Feel free to put through any questions. I asked for questions on Twitter, but I probably bit of more than I could chew, but I'll try and answer them all. Okay, we're on. So this is the tweet that I saw from at Occam's Razor. So PayPal minus 30, Twitter minus 38. There's a list of 20 of these things. You know, DraftKings, the gambling stock, Zoom minus 56, Alibaba minus 56. Everyone thinks, wow, like the Chinese stocks, you know, fallen so far. It's par for the course. You know, the CRISPR companies are down 60%, Fastly minus 65%, Beyond Meat minus 67%. Peloton minus 70, you know, companies like Moderna have halved, even Farfetch are doing really well, minus 48%. These are big, widely owned names that are very valuable companies. They're all down a really significant amount. And basically what seems to be happening is everyone's getting ahead of the Fed tightening. So a huge rally in 2020, these things hit valuation, I guess, well, for many of these companies will be cycle valuation highs, not necessarily highs in price, but certainly highs in valuation. And a lot of that was driven by, you know, $120 billion a month of purchasing. Now, as of December, that's going to be reduced by $15 billion a month. So there's still going to be money pumping out, but it's going to be $15 billion less every month. And that's relevant. So in 2018, if you look at this chart, you can see in 2018, they actually started to properly unwind QE. So the Fed balance sheet actually shrunk. So they're sucking liquidity out of the market. And 2018 was a pretty rough year for a lot of people. You know, there was a huge vol shock at the beginning in Jan 2018. And then basically a 20% bear market in major indices and 32% bear market in small caps at the end of the year. That was then reversed in December 2018. And then there was a kind of a recovery. This was right at the beginning of my fund. So I vividly remember this because that big sell-off coincided basically straight after launch. And then, you know, we recovered into coronavirus. And as you all know, there was a huge sell-off and then huge amount of liquidity being pumped in. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as that comes out now. So what seems to be happening is the market is getting ahead of itself. These companies are selling off in anticipation of that. Valuations are coming down, but in reality, money is still getting pumped out. So it's not a case yet that actual net liquidity is going down. The Fed balance sheet is shrinking. At the moment, it's still growing, but the pace of that is about to change. And that is one theory as to what's going on. Let's first look at Coupa. So Coupa's an interesting one. It's gone from like 40 to 20 times sales whilst posting pretty solid growth. This is one we're actively looking at now. If you look at the longer term chart, like all these, and this will be a common theme, I think one thing I want to do with this is just show you how this pattern has been played out across a huge number of stocks. You know, in 2016, 2017, this thing was trading at 8 to 10 times sales and then maintained 40, 50% growth for 6, 7 years. And the multiple went from 7, 8 times under 10 to over 40. So the return is 4 times on the multiple and then several multiple. Well, you can see the revenue went from about 180 mil to 800 mil. So 4 times increase in multiple, 4 times increase in revenue, and that leads to a stonking return. And this is across the software space. And there's funds that now specialize in software that are very heavily owned. So a lot of wealth managers in Australia for their growth and innovation invest in funds that just specialize in this space. And it's for good reason. You know, these companies have been the best performers. They are extremely good companies, like recurring revenue, very simple in a way. in the sense they generally, you can use the same metrics and analytical tools to assess them. But there's no doubt that the opportunity was there when they were at 10 times sales. At 40 times sales, they've been pretty tough going. You can see this is why they like them, by the way. You can just see every quarter, bigger, better, and stronger, exactly what we look at and why we think there might be an opportunity now. The problem is a lot of these companies were kind of, a lot of them, there's like a whole vintage of them listed in 2015, 16, 17, and they are now much bigger than they were. So they've gone from a few billion dollar market cap to tens of billions of dollars of market cap. And they've gone from growing at 60, 70% down to 20, 30%. Still a good opportunity, but far more than ever, it's important to get in at the right time. And the other interesting thing is, you know, the right time to buy was actually when they're losing money. So we always get asked this, you know, how can you make money? Why isn't that company losing money? Isn't Tesla losing money? I mean, Tesla's not losing money, but there's this perception that it is. You can see here, you know, you wanted to buy something like Cooper when it's operating money. That was the good time to buy. Not now. And then as they kind of grew and as growth slowed down, free cash flow started coming out. And so these companies are very robust now. They're all sitting on pretty large cash balances. They pay a lot of their expenses in stock, which obviously dilutes the company. So when we look at growth rates, we always have to take away, you always have to subtract. It's not exactly addition. You have to account for the change in the number of shares. But it does mean they're really robust. You know, they can't really be killed. They don't have large amounts of leverage. Their biggest cost item is paid in currency that they issue themselves. And you can see here that a lot of them are going to go for a 30, 35% free cash flow margin at maturity. And that kind of implies actually, let's say it's 30 to 35 times free cash flow and you're trading at 20 times free cash flow. That implies like a 6 to 7 times EV sales multiple. So that's actually where these things started. They're listed at 6 to 7 times sales, growing at 40, 50%. After 4 or 5 years, they've grown at that. And the multiple went from 6, 7, 8 times to 40, 50 times, now back to 20. At maturity, the multiple is still going to at least half from here. And that is going to happen at some point. And it looks like it might actually happen in the next 6 months for all these companies. Lightspeed's an interesting one. So this is like a point of sale thing. So the idea is they go for kind of small merchants, you know, like I think Zeus, what's that? There's a local Greek chain called Zeus Street or something along those lines uses them. They use a small chain of bike shops will use them, typically a few stores, those kind of small, medium enterprises. And they win at the point of sale and then they end up, they add all these modules like inventory management and things like that. And this was a red hot stock, one that we're looking at, we don't own, but thinking about it. You can see, you know, in the last few weeks, it's gone from 30 times sales, basically down to 12. So it's more than halved. And that's been pretty brutal. So 125, you know, you blink 2 weeks later, it's 58. And that's kind of the scale of sell-off that we've had in the last, less than the last 2 weeks. It's been a huge shift in tone. And it simultaneously like offers opportunity. For example, this is back down to kind of 12 times sales, which is much closer to where these things can trade long-term. But it's been pretty brutal for anybody that bought at the wrong time. You know, if you got hyped into this, you could have easily lost 30, 40%, you know, a couple of weeks. I thought I'd check in with Teladoc. So Teladoc, we have owned this in the past, but don't anymore, fortunately, because it's just legged down. It peaked at above $300. It's now gone down to 110. So you're talking about companies now losing 2/3 of their value. It was losing 20, 30%. Now it's losing 60, 70% for the ones that aren't performing so well. And this company is kind of performing okay. It's still maintaining growth. It's back down at not quite the lows of multiple. Like Teladoc got down to 5 times, but on a forward-looking basis, you know, it's at 7 times now. So there's really that whole valuation premium that they accrued has just vanished, and it's vanished this year. And most of that at once. It basically went from 300 to... Basically, the multiple basically halved in the space of a couple of weeks. You can see there it went from 24 times to 10. And again, it's tough. You know, there's scope for, there's no doubt on a long-term basis, they'll probably continue to hit their 30, 40% growth. This is a company that issues a lot of stock. They acquire, they pay out a ton. I think that's now coming back to bite them. But it's also indicative of the market. So in the last few weeks, it went from 160 all the way down to 110. So often, you know, for so many, the last 4 or 5 years, every time markets, these kinds of companies dropped 20, 30, 40%, it paid to buy. this year, every time they've dropped, they've kind of rallied and then legged it down again. And if you just happen to buy them after a rally, not like kind of at the lows, you could easily wake up a week later and they have gone from, you know, 150 to 110 when you already thought it was close to the lows. So there's some real carnage going on below the surface. And again, these moves, these like minus 60, minus 70% moves, and, you know, minus 20, minus 30% in the last couple of weeks, they've all happened as the NASDAQ has pushed to new heights. And that's like a fascinating kind of dichotomy of what's going on in the market. And it could really resolve in two ways. You know, these things could be extremely oversold and this could be a low. And you could look back in a year and go, wow, I wonder who it was that picked up shares at $110 at 7x sales for a market leader, you know, with reasonably high margins. Or you could think, or you could see the major tech companies roll over as, you know, as we approach a point where liquidity does get sucked out of the market. It's not an easy one to call. And I think I'm mostly kind of talking about this and thinking about this in the short term out of interest. There's no doubt in my mind, and there should probably be no doubt in your mind, that if you're willing to hold these things for 3 to 5 years, you'll do exceptionally well buying at these periods after these huge sell-offs when the multiples are back down to kind of the middle or bottom of their very long-term ranges. That's really when you want to buy, when these things look sketchy. It's also, everyone's kind of hating on the Founder Arc at the moment because they're stuffed to the brim of these, and many of their worst performing stocks have actually been theirs. You know, Zillow, companies like Teladoc, some of the worst of the biotech companies, pretty much everything except, I guess, Tesla, which has done exceptionally well. That's really held them up and that's been their big position. But I don't think it's over for them because I look at how oversold these companies are. And even with the next 2 to 3 months of reduced liquidity, as we approach closer and closer to rising rates, you could still see a world where these companies are up 50 to 100% and still be well down. But that would do very good things for ARK. So I don't think it's over for her yet. This is the multiple. So obviously now we can look at things like these multiple peaks at 24 times for Teladoc, which has grown largely a lot, significantly by acquisition, and think, wow, that was probably too high. This is a long-term chart though. So it's easy to get carried away. So it kind of listed around 5 times. It's mostly been trading it in 5 to 10 times sales and then rocketed up to 20 and then has been a horror show. It's important to remember, you know, you've done exceptionally well. If you bought it 10 times, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you still 4 to 5 times your money. And that's pretty exceptional over that period of time. And now we're back at the levels where in the past, over 4 to 5 years, you made 4 to 5 times your money. And you don't need multiple appreciation now to achieve those results. Where if you're buying things, you know, valuation peaks, you make life much, much, much harder for yourself. And they're still relatively confident of hitting their 25 to 30% CAGR over the next few years. And I think with the amount of pressure they're on, this is not a market that's rewarding people who suggest targets that they're not going to hit. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually do better than that. I'm going to check in with Twilio. This has been a very long held position of ours. It's up to kind of 13 times forward sales. And again, at the beginning of this year, it was 30 times. So Twilio, which has grown, you know, it's probably going to post 57% growth, mostly organic this year, has more than halved from 30 times to 13. Again, 30 was too high. I don't know if 13 is too low. You can see here that in the past, it's definitely gone down to 6, 7, 8. This is a 50% margin business. So you think it's going to trade at 10 to 20 times gross profit, then you're talking about long-term, this trades at 5 to 10 times. So as it approaches from 13 down to 10, it starts getting to the point where your actual return is the growth rate or the organic growth rate minus stock-based comp, adjusted for stock-based comp, because you have to kind of multiply them rather than subtract them. And so you're starting to get very compelling future returns, even if the next few months are as rough as they might be. And this is kind of their recent results. So the key points here are 65% growth. So still growing. A lot of that, some of that additional growth was inorganic, but their net expansion rate is 131%. So that's their base level of growth from existing customers is 31%. And that's the key number for all of these companies. As long as that stays at 25-30%, these will stay at 25-30% plus whatever cohorts they can add with time. They're still amazing businesses, actually. That's about Roku. Now, Roku, we don't think it's very high quality because it's basically effectively like a stick that you add on to your TV. Most of their revenue is advertising. They'll compete against, if you buy Samsung TV, Samsung will have their own operating system through which you can access Netflix, Apple TV, things like that. There is one interesting thing about Roku, and that is their average revenue per user. So they have been able to slowly add users, even now when they're under pressure. You know, they went from 55 million users to 56 million. Note that that's a very small increase. So the year-on-year number in users is high, but the quarter-on-quarter is low. But, you know, average revenue per user went from $36 to $40. So they got very, like, a couple of percent of growth in users, but 10% growth in average revenue per user for the quarter. And that's like the key. As long as they can keep the average revenue per user growing and they can just add a little, keep that user growth positive, Roku will be completely fine. And again, this is a 5x EV sales stock that went all the way up to 20 and now all the way back down to 7. Much of that this year. You know, again, look at it. It was like a 50, it listed at $50 at 5x sales, went all the way up to 400, almost 450, actually over 450. Now he's back down to 220. So these are huge moves. There's been a real bear market in these kinds of stock. This has been going on since February. It's basically sold down relentlessly ever since, from, you know, 460 down to 220. That's like a big steady down move. And the multiple, next year's multiple is back at, you know, 7x. So it's interesting. I think for us, it's probably doesn't have the quality that we look for, in the sense that it's advertising, streaming saturated, extremely high competition. It's obviously another one of Cathie Wood's stocks. I think from here, you're getting safer and safer to buy for people who are in it. But again, there's an overarching question. Can the NASDAQ roll over and fall? And can companies like this rally in that environment? If you go into a bear market, can a company like Roku perform? I'm not sure. I think the highest quality companies can. They can actually go up during periods where the market sells off. Basically, that's how you survive these periods. You know, for example, we're basically flat, maybe down 1 or 2% this month, even though under the hood, it seems like all of our companies have been behaving like this. And that's because, you know, Roku's doubled, Tesla's at highs, not Roku, Roblox has doubled, and some of our other new positions have also done 100% or more. And you only need 1 or 2 of those to really offset a lot. And if the NASDAQ sells off, that is kind of how you, one of the better ways to survive something like that is to have some rockstar positions that perform. But it seems unlikely to me, actually. It seems unlikely to me that rates would rise, inflation would rise. First, the inflation rises, then the anticipation of rates pushes down these multiples. And you're just seeing this like suck of liquidity. You're starting to feel it. You know, real estate seems to have come off the boil in Sydney. You're seeing, for example, Cathie Wood basically didn't really get serious redemptions until now. And you're seeing like just risk appetite across my friends in the industry seems to have really waned even in the last few weeks. And generally you want to buy when everybody's negative, but it also feels like there's something else going on under the surface that's more serious. I'm trying to have it both ways, but I will try and draw some conclusions at the end. This is another cool little one, Upstart. This is the one that somebody went on TV and didn't know what it was. Again, look, 32x sales to 15x sales in a few weeks, huge drop. They've actually reported really well as well, like 250% revenue growth. And like year-on-year revenue growth isn't quite relevant in these, but you know, what is it? $30, 15% revenue growth in the last 3 months. And that is quite relevant. With all these things, you know, these have been largely market-driven moves. It was a market-driven rush into these stocks that ramped it up from 12x sales to 32x sales. And similarly, there's been like a market pull of liquidity. So if you look at something like Zillow, like we wrote about how that's down, you know, that is just one of many, many companies that is down about that much. You know, it's really been, in my mind, it's been more of a market thing at the moment that is pushing these things down. Look, it's pretty good numbers. This is exactly the kind of growth profiles we want to be part of and to own long term. And you know, it takes time for these quarters to go by. Ask about EBR. So EBR is about to list. There's an IPO that listed last week, which we did have a few shares in, a very small amount, called Tissue Repair, which dropped. I think now is probably a really bad time to be listing any kind of company. To be honest, I think like the market has changed so much from when, you know, the roadshow of EBR was done. We really like this company though. So if you look at the four kind of pace, basically what these people do, it's kind of like a pacemaker, but they don't have, I mean, it's not actually a pacemaker, but it's similar. It goes in the heart. It's a fraction of the size of existing of pacing only devices by companies like Medtronic, Abbott, Boston Scientific. and it uses ultrasound to charge it. So you don't have to have wires going straight into the heart. And that is a serious medical issue. And not having to do that, being able to charge it effectively remotely, means that it's a huge increase in outcomes. And these companies can sell for exceptional amounts if they work. So they're moving into phase three now, but it's one of those companies where they've already put this thing in patients and it's worked. So even though the phase three is the one that matters and has the most statistical power, we're convinced that it will work. And so I say we're convinced. That's not like a scientific term, but we'll invest in things like these if we're convinced it'll work. And that passes. But I'll have a lot more to say to that. I might even write a note about it because I think it's a really cool company. That's about PayPal. There's something going on in payments. So, and it's surprising it's only taken till now. But, you know, PayPal's down a lot. It's worth noting that this has been one of the better performers of the last few years as well. So it might have dropped 30, 40% or 40% in the last few weeks, last couple of months. But you know, it's still been one of the, it's still up 4 or 5 times over the last 5 years. And the reason I said surprising is obviously all the innovation, all the smart people are now in crypto land. And PayPal to me has also always been a horrible user experience. It's very sad that, you know, the epic leadership and founding team it had, and, you know, there's initial people like Elon Musk that joined and worked on it weren't there, because they really could have been all the value that's accrued to crypto could have been basically PayPal's, I think. They could have been the internet of money. They could have solved all those solutions, but didn't. And I think they will be structurally under pressure for a while. But again, you've got to remember, this is a company doing $7 billion of EBITDA. It's 30 times EBITDA, 25 times next year. These are actually companies that will be somewhat defensive, and it hasn't fallen as much as the other growth companies or even the other fintech companies. And so you almost feel it in the market. Everyone's gone from like thinking about EV sales to thinking like, wait, how much money is this thing actually making? You can feel that shift in focus, and companies like PayPal will find a floor, I think, before others. Another way you could think about it is there's like risk flows. So the simplest model of the way risk works, very effective, is you have your low risk treasuries, close to no risk treasuries at the bottom, which is government money. And you can kind of pump money in or suck money out there. But obviously, if you buy a treasury there, somebody has sold it to you and they get the cash. So they have to go up the risk curve, because if the treasury is at the bottom of the risk curve, it has to go up the risk curve. It might go into credit, and then somebody there has to go take those dollars and go into equities. And then within equities, for example, there's, you know, the tech space, and you've got the ones with mountains of cash, the big tech, that make a ton of money. They're trading really cheaply, like your Microsoft, Apple, Google. And then you've got your very fast growing loss making companies that are early on in their journey to profitability. And so when you get these big risk off moves, even within, you've got that flow from out of equities into credit, into treasuries. The central banks then push on that and use QE to like kind of push money into treasuries, hopefully into credit and then into equities. So you've got the risk, everyone's selling down and pushing money down, the central bank kind of like pushing money up. And then even within equities, you've got a similar dynamic. So money flows, not the money really flows, but what we're thinking about is money flows out of these high risk names into the more stable ones. And you do see that, and it's really supportive of those bigger ones, which, as it so happens, we do not own, because it's not a very good business to own stocks like that that anybody can buy for free. Visa also interesting. So Visa started to sell off. But I put a 10-year chart here because I wanted to put it in perspective and show that actually, you know, this has still been one of the better performers. $25 to $200, really one of the better performers. And this has been like the cornerstone of a ton of very low-risk funds that have made Visa and MasterCard core positions. These companies have ground up. But now I think they're... And they've extracted extraordinary rents on the global economic system. You know, payments are information, these things. And within Visa networks, you know, it's trusted. You don't need that whole cryptographic thing going on. They could have done this, everything much cheaper. And you can see, you know, they've sucked out, I guess, $16 billion of earnings, $20 billion in this kind of financial year of theirs. They'll probably suck out $20 billion. MasterCard probably somewhat similar, not quite as much. That's a lot of economic capacity that's been sucked out by these companies just to kind of transfer data. These ones have always annoyed me, because I've simultaneously seen them as amazing businesses while also being kind of annoyed that transactions are so expensive. But yet to see if I put the long-term chart there, just so you know that this move is well within, it's still been one of the better performing stocks. Somebody asked about Coupang. So they grew 48% year over year. This was a pretty tough comps. Great result. Its gross margin 16%, so lower than something like C, which is worth knowing. And every cohort grew at least 25% year on year. So their average revenue per user equivalent has been exceptional. And that's the baseline of growth. You can see the chart has been absolutely smashed. Probably came on too high, $50 down to kind of 26, 27. We bought the first dip, which has basically been the story of our year. When things drop 30, 40%, we're generally buyers. And then obviously they've legged down again. We've still been buying down at 27 and we can kind of see what's been happening. So, You can see that, you know, SoftBank has been big sellers of this. They still got 14 billion. They sold 1.5 billion of the last quarter that was reported. Interestingly, Stanley Druckenmiller bought it. It's one of his bigger positions as well. And so it seems like if you like Stanley Druckenmiller and you don't like SoftBank, they're kind of doing trading in the same way at the same time as we were. I've also put this one here to show some of the other things that SoftBank Investment Advisors UK holds. So Coupang, DoorDash, Uber, Compass. These are not, in my opinion, fantastic companies to own right now. Ask about Editas. The problem with Editas, like all these, they're a long way away from commercialization, and they were hyped up to the moon. So I wish them well. If you look at kind of the middle gene edited cell medicines, sickle cell disease and beta thalassemia, these are the ones that a ton of people are going for. So my bet is like most of them obviously can't win the market, even if they all succeeded. But it's really bad to bet on companies where a significant amount of value is underwritten in a disease that hasn't quite been, where a number of companies have come very close to cures and only one of them will really win. It suggests that there's not going to be a huge pot of gold. And if there is, only one of those 20 companies will win it. Look, it's probably priced about right, 2.4 bill. You know, you can see that it's gone from like 25 to 85 at the beginning of this year. So it has been part of that hype cycle. And that huge run up did coincide with the start of what I think has been a pretty serious bear market in these kinds of growth stocks, these kinds of innovation stocks. Ask about Cloudflare versus Fastly. Now, I haven't owned either of these. And I know there's some pretty serious software analysts that read my stuff. So it's too stupid. But my two cents is, look, it's at 104 times sales, $68 billion company on $600 million of revenue. It's not growing at 100%. It's growing at 50%. Yes, it could compete heavily with kind of AWS. And yes, all websites will kind of, a significant number of serious websites will end up paying Cloudflare for their entire lifetimes. So it is that good. It is a really good company, but people don't really make money at 100 times sales just for that multiple collapse. That's basically inevitable. You make money buying something like this at 15 times or 20 times or 30 times. And, you know, we said no to all those multiples. So I guess we got that wrong, but Fastly is like a kind of cautionary tale. So Fastly was the one, you know, this one went from like $17 to $120 like that. Remember it? It happened over 6 months. This was the darling. This was the Cloudflare. If the charts were rebased so that the top was kind of, we were at the time that it topped, it would look very similar to this Cloudflare one. Difference was is Fastly kind of topped out at 50 times sales, which is plenty. And it hit it a couple of times and then 45 times shortly after and then collapsed to 15. And that can happen to any of these high-flying names. It'll only take a few weeks and certainly a few months. They can go full swing from 50 to 15. And then if it happens over 3 months, they're basically the same company. And these companies are growing at 40, 50%. So over 3 months, they're 10% bigger. It's not nearly enough to kind of soften a swing where your multiple drops 75%. So I certainly don't think it's Cloudflare is a buy here. And I actually reckon you're probably better off buying. If you had to be long Cloudflare and short the other, obviously the winning trade has been to bet on Cloudflare. This is another example of which there are basically a lifetime of examples of where the number one just did so much better than the number two. Not that they're exactly the same businesses, but they are close. But maybe this is one of those periods where you don't actually want to own the number one because it's just been bid to the moon. And, you know, the future of that is also 5 to 10 times sales. And it's a long way from 100 to 5. Or 10 at least. I think we're kind of getting to the end of these charts. Here's Fastly. Here's that chart. So you can see in the beginning of this year, it went from 45 to, I guess, 14 in about 3 months. It's lost 2/3 of its value. And that's probably it. That's what I'll talk about. I mean, this is a chart I've showed before where inflation is now running at over 6%. It is coming through to wages and it doesn't seem to be abating. There's been serious underinvestment in commodities as well, which I find fascinating. Like firstly, the ESG trend. These companies can't just switch on production. I mean, there's small exceptions like shale, for example, but even shale, the rig count in shale energy is way below what you'd think given where the price is. Shale was red hot, you know, a few years ago. It's funny how these things swing so hard. But now all institutional investors have basically been compelled by their investors to say they're not going to invest in these companies. So there's chronic underinvestment in commodities across the board. And that suggests that the price bit is certainly going to be there. Add in, you know, input prices, add in wages, and inflation seems to be here to stay. But again, what makes the environment so challenging and why I don't think it's time to throw in the towel is that rates are still way, way, way below where inflation is. So you still want to hold assets in nominal values when they're inflating in price. Another way of thinking about it is I think inflation is just such a loaded term, which means so many things to so many different people, so many different things to different people. I think being like you're in an environment of rising prices just seems like a better way of phrasing it. So all prices are rising and the great companies are still posting exceptional results. And part of that is this rising price environment. It's probably going to be another one where the better quality company you're in, the better you go. But it also means that you could have a situation where, you know, equities just perform exceptionally well over the next 12 months because they don't shrink. They actually perform better. They're able to pass on prices to consumers and equities are priced in nominal dollars. They're not priced in inflation adjusted dollars. And so that's also a possibility. So it's very hard to balance these two things. Thoughts on C's quarter on quarter growth? Pretty flat in digital entertainment. Yeah, it's pretty hard for C to continue growing. You know, there's still the thing about digital entertainment, so gaming, it's kind of like the free cash flow they get to then enter India, Poland. They've already killed it in South America. They're going to become a global company. That's one company that I think you want to be buying on these dips. Absolutely. Can you compare and contrast between mid-cap growth names that haven't fallen? You know, I'd say Cloudflare is at 104 times. I'd say that is probably too hype. Unity, I don't know well enough. But Roblox, we do own and have been beneficiaries of. And Roblox never got that high. You know, it's in the low 20s EV sales. It's a long way to 100. We're just holding. We're in for the long term. Actually, almost all our stuff are in it for the long term. When we make changes, we're really changing around the margin. What do you do with the portfolio from here? There's always something that hasn't worked out. There's always something we're selling because they've reported poorly and that gives us a bit of cash to reallocate. We're looking really closely at these companies. You know, we're still up. It hasn't been a great year for us, you know, but we're still up 7-9% net over a period where many of our companies have dropped between 50 and 75%. So somehow the portfolio has held up because we've managed to find enough winners in the current environment. So we're absolutely taking advantage of these kinds of moves. And we basically want a portfolio that when these things do move again, they're not going to go up 30, 40%. You know, they'll go up 3, 4, 5 times. So 300, 400, 500% at the back end of this sell-off. Whether it gets worse before then, you know, there's two sides to that. So we're playing for that 300, 400, 500% at the back end, and obviously much more as well if you can hold these things for more than 5 years. That's kind of the approach. I think with these, you zoom out and just be long term, or don't be long term and don't be in them. It's one or the other. But these things do provide opportunities. So the ones I'm most interested in right now are probably Twilio because it's maintained the high growth and it's been a long standing position. So we might add a bit to that tonight, or we will add a bit to that tonight. The other one I'm thinking about as a new position is Twitter. And so we've always had this thing, it's customer love, explosive growth. Every time we've waited to customer love, it's killed it. You know, whether it's Tesla, Afterpay, more recently Roblox, cryptocurrency, the ones with the obsessive communities have vastly outperformed everything else. And if I had to think about mistakes this year, and there were certainly mistakes made, we probably a few times chased too much growth, which got us into parts of the market that didn't have that quality, didn't have that community. And so I think we are going to really focus in on that customer love piece. And to me, Twitter is obsessive. It's down 35-40%, I think. So it has sold off. It's at 5x forward sales, 22x EV EBITDA, so it's cheap. They're the kind of numbers that can survive, you know, a high red environment. Similarly, Snapchat had a bumper a couple of years and now trading similar mid-single digits and then re-rated. And Twitter's just started charging people voluntarily, so you can pay $3, I think, a month, which obviously you immediately do if you use it a lot. It just allows you to edit things and for a short period of time and a few other advantages. And now they've got a direct payment from, like in the past, I've had to kind of eke advertising dollars out of, I guess, people like me. I'd much prefer to just pay them. I'm still getting advertised too, but I have a few other advantages instead. And that's vastly better. So I think that's interesting. If they've got, they can get subscription revenue on some of their users, that's the super high margin, drop straight to the bottom line. And there's a number of things they could do, kind of increase that. And so that they're two that we're looking at kind of right now out of all of these. On things like, you know, your Teladocs, Lightspeed, those things, kind of watching and waiting. My personal view is you're very close to where those things will bottom out, but also aware that we do have a series of tightening coming, even if it's just tapering. And if there's a sell-off, these things will drop 20-30% again. And so just keeping that in the back of the mind, like we've got to have something ready that we can throw at those kinds of names. Long-term change to payments with crypto P2P. Yeah, I'm glad you agree that PayPal's user experience is rubbish. Yeah, look, it'll happen real fast at some point. I think the way it'll happen is that there'll be apps where they just use cryptocurrency and don't even know about it, but it's much faster. But ultimately, the one thing that is new in crypto, I guess it's always been there, but the excitement in the communities around them is completely blows you away when you see them. You know, like I've mentioned before, I've got an intern that's about to drop some NFTs, and there's five of them that have built this thing. It's got to like 18,000 people on their Discord. They launched it like a couple of weeks ago, maybe even just 1 week ago. Imagine doing something when you're young that just like that quickly creates an obsessive community. And that is one of thousands, if not tens of thousands of communities of people that are really obsessed. And I just can't remember. I can't think of an equivalent of mine from my uni days where a group of people were just so excited and so involved. I can think of like things that like it was apathy. And to the extent that people were interested in that kind of thing, it was in a kind of selfish way. Or you wanted to get into finance, or you wanted to do art, or you did some theater that your handful of your friends would go and watch. That was like kind of the experience that I remember at that age. I don't remember, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 communities just forming spontaneously and chatting deep into the night about how they're going to do all these cool new things that are artistic and creative. Yeah, really impressive. And I think those Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, they've been extracting rents. And I certainly hope that there's a way to stop them doing that. MasterCard and Visa also missed the buy now, pay later products development. So just reading this out, the legacy banking relationships are where their value lies. That is true. That is true. Any thoughts on Matterport? So Matterport's a company that you've probably used it if you've inspected real estate digitally. It's kind of where you go in and kind of look at a house. They'll go in with all these cameras and make a 3D representation. I think it's a great company. It's one of the best SPACs that went through. We looked at it a couple of times. It's one of those ones that never quite got cheap enough, never got that killer moment where you're like, now I just want to load up on this. So we never did, but it's one of the highest quality SPACs. And that's saying something. Of that generation, it was mostly junk. As we now know, 6 to 9 months later, when we can compare what these companies said they would do, what they've actually achieved. 4D Medical, not a huge amount. More comments on Upstart. Yeah, look, I really like it. Just be aware that, and we do actually own that one. Just be aware that these companies are under a lot of pressure in the short term. You know, this is a company that was so hyped. It was the ultimate momentum player the last few months. You know, and you knew that because you had that trader going on, Mark Minervi, who I've actually known for 20, 30 years or something. The first books that I read, he was featured in. So I knew who he was. When he got on and didn't know what they did and was pumping the stock up, it was kind of a sign of the times. But yeah, when these things swing, you do actually want to invest. So we're pretty happy. But, you know, our purchase price is much lower than where it is now. So it would get really exciting if it drops, you know, below our purchase price and we could lower our purchase price. How do the revenue multiples now compare to early 2000s? When tech blew up, they seem to be higher. I remember like things like 100 times PEs. I don't remember people talking about EV sales in the same way. Obviously, there was a lot of junk that had no revenue. But, you know, we're definitely at those levels now in some companies. But like I said, like I just gave you a ton of examples of companies that are now trading back to where they were 2-3 years ago and are approaching, you know, long-term lows. So it's not a case of every company is trading at 2000 levels. In fact, many of them are trading below. There's a handful of companies leading this market. The leaders are the big tech, and they're trading at 3 to 6 times that. They're cheap. You know, they're not trading at 100 times, and they have huge amounts of cash, and they'll earn money on that cash as interest rates rise. You know, they're great players. They're not trading expensively at all. But then there's your Cloudflares, your Datadogs, those kinds of companies that have ripped. And then there's a ton of companies that traded where those companies were that have now been crashing. It's not quite the early 2000s, but it is worth noting that, you know, rising interest rate environment of the early 2000s, the bear market wasn't 6 months, it was like 2 years. And so that's kind of like the worst case scenario. I think the worst case scenario is like a depression, which Greece had in living memory. And obviously the US and most of the world had 100 years ago. So I guess just in living memory, but not really, like right at the edge of living memory. That involved like super tightening conditions where the people in charge just massively tightened and constricted. You know, Greece was imposed on them externally. In the US, it was, you know, things like the gold standard and just this liquidation movement where you should just liquidate things, which was not productive. Now we are not like that. Now when things go wrong, central bankers will react decisively and governments will coordinate to support the people that they govern, which is sensible. And surprisingly was seen as a strange thing to do not that long ago. If you think about the worst case scenario, what's the worst case scenario? The ports are in the US are congested, extremely high prices, that destroys demand. At the same time, they're raising rates. You get this rising price cuts demand, meets sucking of money out of the system, and high interest rates that kind of suck dollars out of every single person's pocket. That is something that could definitely happen. But and that would involve a pretty nasty short, sharp sell-off once that came, and the data would come out. Markets would sell off everything, this is awful. And then the data would come out that, oh, you're in a recession then. And then you'd be able to see after the case that it was like the higher prices and that it killed demand. And then central bankers did the wrong thing and raised rates into that, which is exactly what happened in, say, like 2008, 7 and 8, or 6 and 7. But if that happens, then there will be a release valve, which is central bankers will reverse, prices will fall, demand will go down, prices will fall, interest rates will be cut, QE's back on, and then, you know, it's off to the races. And then ultimately the companies that grow, add users, revenues, and so on and so forth will do exceptionally well throughout a period like that, even though they'll be hit the same as everybody else on the head when that first shock happens. And I think that's actually not an unlikely outcome, that current high prices, wages, ports, input commodities do cause some destruction of demand. That does coincide with coordinated attempts by central banks to ease, so not to tighten. That's something that could definitely happen in the next few months. Any thoughts on Camplify's progress? Yeah, look, they're a great company. It seems to all be on track. It's not as cheap as it was. It's basically tripled now, but we still hold. I think Australians are going to be pretty keen to get out and about. I know I certainly am. I've just read from Q&A. There's also a chat. Let me see what's going on in the chat. Any thoughts on ASX AHI? Sorry, I don't know that. Appreciate the courage of Teladoc. Regeneron's interesting. Biotech has basically sold off. Like the indices is looking pretty bad. How might they fare over correction? There's so many parts of biotech. So there's a ton of different devices. There's like an elephant in the room, which is Cathie Wood, who put tens of billions of dollars into these companies. And there's also a SPAC boom, which we can't hold her responsible for, where a bunch of biotechs listed via SPAC. And a lot of these companies sell tools and are great businesses and great economics and require huge amounts of capital though. Think about this, think about a company that, you know, has got $25 million worth of sales. They sell, I don't know, a kit that studies proteins in cells. Like that's not something that everybody's going to buy. You know, there's a handful of buyers in Sydney that for that. But maybe they'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy some equipment, and there'll be a stream of ongoing revenue for consumables, maybe to assess the data. So the way, and there's a lot of companies like this, like that profile that I said, where the model is to sell like a big box that does some cool new calculation that sees into a cell or measures something that hasn't been measurable before. There's quite a few companies like that. That would have been great investments. You know, we've been able to get in real cheap. It's like mostly venture capital funded, you know, maybe get them 10 million to 20 million revenue, maybe list them at a 400 mil market cap, and they get bought out at $1 billion when they reach 50 to 100. You know, it's that kind of play, like everybody's a winner. What's happened now is that same company that would have like gone up in value nicely each time and made everybody happy has come on at a $4 billion valuation with a SPAC and lost 75, 80%. And it's just been a horror show for shareholders, investors, employees whose stock was involved. It's just been a disaster, even though the company itself is exactly the same as if it was funded in a different way. Similarly, a lot of those companies were bid up to 40, 50 times sales. It's interesting these where you can see some of these other companies now, the handful of, you know, Cloudflare and Datadogs. That wasn't good for those companies because they've been in bear markets since and a bunch of unhappy investors. And so it does matter. These things do matter. It does change, you know, it's path dependent on how these things go. And unfortunately for those companies, a lot of them are still trading extremely richly. And there might be further to go of the bear market and those kinds of things. But then you have companies that, you know, drug development, it became fashionable. And we certainly, for very good reason, like everybody wants platforms. You know, we look at that, like that's what we want to invest in. Those platforms have also been bid up to crazy heights. And it's hard to see how they will push on from that $4 or $5 billion market cap for research organizations with no revenue producing drugs. It's hard to see them pushing, you know, to $5 billion, $10 billion, $15 billion, only doubling, tripling, quadrupling until they actually deliver. And that's 2 to 3 years away when the trials go through and they can actually start generating revenues. So biotech is tough. It's a really long and difficult journey for these companies. But we're still looking for opportunities. I'll do something on EBR, which is an Australian one. Radiopharm is also going to list, which is another thing we've invested in. And, you know, we're beneficiaries of that uplift. It was part of our returns from 2000, was catching some of these, getting into some of these companies real cheap, you know, in single-digit EV sales. And largely selling out, you know, when they got to 30, 40, 50 times. Still know all these companies pretty well, still watching them. Slowly been adding. Like we added to a SPAC that was down 75% that had just like handheld ultrasound things that a doctor can just not quite carry around, but is very easily accessible. There are opportunities that we're investing in, but these are 3 to 5 year plays. And I think if that scenario that I just discussed, namely rising rates coinciding with high price induced destruction of demand, if that happens, biotech will probably sell off. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to do exceptionally well over the long term either. It's entry price is more critical than ever. Any thoughts on ADO? Ooh, I don't know. Have looked into Fiverr, but not recently. It'd be a good one to check in on, actually. Great company, never owned it, should have at one point. Square has held up well against PayPal. Do you have a preference between the two? Yeah, we own Square. Really like it. We've sold it down a bit because we want to buy some other stuff that's growing faster. I think they've got to digest this Afterpay acquisition. I think it was genius that, you know, Anthony Eisen, Nick Molnar sold out at some crazy multiple. As you can see from the other companies in this environment, and who knows what happened, but, you know, Afterpay will be getting probably smashed along with these other high growth, high valued things. I did not think they'd be trading at the valuation they were bought for by Square, but it's a great outcome for Afterpay shareholders because they can swap out very highly richly valued Afterpay shares for much lower valued Square shares effectively. So they need to digest that acquisition. I think Square is not going to be topping performance charts over the next 6 to 12 months, but long-term still great. This is the rapid test one. I've been sent a bit of stuff on it. Live with me. Maybe I'll cover it in another one when I have a strong view. And Rhythm Bioscience. We've got notes on that, but I don't think I have conviction on that to actually comment. I might wrap things up there. Are there any other questions? Doesn't look like it. Okay, thanks so much, everyone. Really appreciate you checking in and signing in. I hope that was interesting. If you have any thoughts or feedback or things you want me to cover next time, please let me know. And I think I'm actually doing one of these next Friday. It'll probably be more structured and maybe I'll cover some of these things we didn't get to. So hope you all have a lovely evening. Thank you.